I will do anything for love. I will do anything for love.
Hi, I'm Toddly T.
Tom Denny.
Welcome to the Bitter End Podcast, where we are all about werewolves.
We would wolfy do anything for wolfing wolves. You wolfy bastards.
Mate, if you are coming at me right now trying to talk to me about anything except werewolves, I ain't interested. Keep on walking, sunshine, because we are here to watch and talk about Howling 4, the original Nightmare. We are about to become halfway through our journey deep into the dark woods of the Howling franchise, and we have already gone through some crazy-ass places. We've been to America, Transylvania, fucking Australia, briefly into Siberia. Where are we going next? Who knows?
Probably back to California, I think, from the looks of the trailer.
Yeah. Do describe this trailer, please.
So, like, as Todd mentioned in the last podcast, this film is meant to be more close to the original Howling novel than the first film, supposedly. Hence the title, The Original Nightmare, which is a very odd title when you're four films deep.
Yeah, it's not like that. It's not like it's a remake. It's not Howling, The Original Nightmare. It's still Howling 4.
Mm. But I mean, like, the second film was the only one that held any thread from a previous film. The third one had nothing in correlation to the first two, other than it had werewolves.
Yeah, that's true.
So this one, I think we might be getting into, like a latter-day Hellraiser situation here, where we're just having standalone werewolf films from here on in that all are going under the Howling banner.
Mm-hmm.
Quite possibly. So this looks better than the last few films.
Oh my God, the little glimpse of the wolf we get in this trailer.
Oh, the wolf.
It is dope.
So the wolf in this, I think, looks like the most like the Michael Jackson Thriller wolf.
He's got like black fur, like black, a kind of a leathery face.
Yes, very dark, like a very dark-faced werewolf with not such a long snout. So it's a little bit more hybrid between human and wolf.
Mm.
And it looks angry, man. Like, really angry. Because, like, in the last film, like, the wolves, they just looked like dogs, which didn't really convey, you know, it could be a happy dog, could be a sad dog, could be an angry dog. This thing, no doubt, is fucking pissed off. And
yeah,
it's going to eat your bloody face off.
It legit looks scary. And the announcer guy on the trailer says, like, everyone's worst nightmare is back. And I believe him.
It's definitely trying to riff in this trailer on the first one. It's got that ripping flesh into kind of like into the Howling logo,
mm-hmm,
thing that you had in the first film. So it is trying to pull on that former glory, I think. And it looks very, you know, we're in the woods, misty woods, wolves.
Classic setting.
Characters. I think maybe it's because we know that this is meant to be based on the books, and maybe we'll have some parallels with the first film. You said you can see who all the characters are meant to be.
Mm.
So it'll be interesting to see how that play, like, who's the Bill?
Yeah, we've got like a psychologist type. There seems to be the sexy vampy type girl,
yeah,
in there.
Who's like the feral wolf boy, like all of that.
Maybe it'll surprise us, I don't know.
Yeah, it gives away quite a lot of wolfiness. I mean, I guess because we're Howling 4 now, everyone knows it's werewolves. Like, the first trailer, you hold it back. In this, like, they just want to get bums on seats. We all know it's going to be werewolves, and the werewolves look good. Like, we've had two films of iffy werewolves at best. So I'm really looking forward to having some, like, good, like, some more, like, top draw wolfiness. Because it's all about wolfiness this season, people.
On the subject of top draw,
mm,
let's play that fabulous game, Tom. Let's play that fabulous guessing game at the IMDb score of this film. So, the last film, Howling 3, The Marsupials, that was made in 1987 and got a 3.1. This is made but 1 year later, a mere 12 months,
okay.
1988. Would you like to take a punt on the score?
Oh, it's going up. Five. I'm saying five. It looks substantially better.
It looks like a five,
From the cinematography and the creature effects on display in the trailer, it looks a lot better.
Well, I can only say that while I agree with you, the good people of IMDb,
ooh,
do not agree with you. It has gone up.
Okay.
By a tiny, tiny increment.
Oh, really?
It is a 3.4.
Man, we're still in the threes.
Yeah, so still better than The Howling 2, even. This score ranks it the second best Howling film so far. We had a 6.6, a 3.3, 3.1, and now 3.4.
Because the lowest Highlander was in the threes. That was the source.
Yeah.
I don't
that
think...
That was a rotter.
Did any of the Friday films get that low?
I don't think any got as low as a 4.
Oh, man. So this rot is set in.
This is weak source.
Yeah. With that in mind, should we watch this fucker?
My heart and eyes are open. I am ready to receive this original nightmare.
Yeah, I'm going to ignore that. I'm not going to let that score sway me because the trailer looked better than that score would indicate. I want that wolf to be a good wolf.
Come ravage me, wolf. Let's go.
Oh!
Meh.
Oh, there were points when I was mad enough to kill.
Yeah. I mean, it was... I'm tired, man.
I'm tired.
I'm tired.
It beat us down, people. That one beat us down. There was a bit of redemption at the end, but... Oh, it was a slogger.
I repeatedly told you throughout, no, man, I'm going to give it a chance. I'm going to meet it on its own terms. No, I see. Let's see where this is going. Yeah, this is an unusual approach, but let's see where they're going with this. An hour and 20 minutes into it.
Into a 94-minute film.
There was nothing to redeem it.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness me, though, those last 10 minutes.
The end of it is pretty good, but we will get to that because... This film, we can't let this film off because, fuck me, I was just flipping the bird at the screen. I was just getting just pissed off. I was just like an angry drunk, just shouting at the television because
this is the first film we've ever watched that has led me, it's compelled me to doodle in my notebook rather than
I noticed
make actual
that.
Notes.
I looked over and I was like, he's not even writing notes anymore. I didn't really write notes. Like, so the last two films were a muddled mess with too much in them and not enough in them, if you know what I mean.
I do.
But I wrote a lot of notes because I was just like, fuck, I don't know how I'm just going to remember all of this. This one, I was just like...
So, we need to take you guys through this. I'm sorry to have to inflict this upon you.
Howling 4 starts off with a really tight... 80s song.
Booyah! Those are some tight 80s jams, man.
Something evil. Something dangerous. On the borders of my consciousness. Something
And this is like opening credits. And you know how we've said like that the other films have been based on like the book Howling 1, the book Howling 2, the book Howling 3. We thought this film was more closely based on Howling 1. It says in the opening credits, based on the books, Howling 1, 2 and 3?
Fuck off, is it?
But then
oh, you are taking the piss.
It's
guys.
Taking the piss because it also just means then, so what was like Howling 3 based on, which was based on the book Howling 3? Because we don't go anywhere near Australia in this. We don't go anywhere near Transylvania in this.
No.
It just has... Do you mean like based on 1, 2 and 3 because they all have werewolves?
Honestly, guys, the plot of this is the plot of the Howling 1. Bit of shitter.
Yeah, totally. That's totally it. The plot of The Howling 1, a bit shit. So, the very introduction to our main character, Marie, I really liked. And then the film just takes a massive nosedive. So, Marie is a best-selling author.
Yeah.
And we are introduced to her going through this big 80s hotel. She is in the lift to the roof garden to have a meeting with, I think, who's her publisher, her agent, who's called Tom. In the lift, she sees this big bug-eyed nun.
She's weird looking, man.
Yeah. She drops her manuscript. She's a bit like, oh, no. And then she gets up, and then the nun's gone. And then she's having this, like, just very bland conversation with Tom, her agent. And on the roof terrace, they're barbecuing. And then she, for a minute, looks up at the barbecue, and she sees this bug-eyed nun stood by the barbecue. And she's like, oh, that's a bit weird. She looks at Tom, looks over. The bug-eyed nun's gone. There's a wolf head in flames on the barbecue. She screams, flash cut, mental hospital.
It's off the chain. So this entire sequence that Tom has just described, this is the stand-in for that really incredible opening 20-minute bit of the first Howling. This whole bit with Dee Wallace's character going to meet Eddie Quist, and she's undercover, and she's got the cops have mic'd her up, and she has to go into that awful porn theater and like meet him, and then she's traumatized and she loses her memory. She goes to see the psychiatrist, all of this stuff. No. They deal with that in a 30-second scene where she's having a nice bit of lunch. There's a wolf head on the barbecue, and everyone she knows is like, lock her up!
She's shouted at a barbecue in a public space.
Lock her up! And that is it. That is what happens to you in 1988 if you see a wolf on a barbecue.
Yeah. I will be very careful when I do any barbecuing from now on, lest I be incarcerated in the loony bin.
Such dark times.
So then, you know, but then they kind of let her out of the loony bin as easily as they incarcerated her. She gets picked up by her husband, Richard, who is like the most 80s dude bro dog you have ever seen. Like, he's got Chuck Norris hair, like swarthy beard, shirt unbuttoned down to his navel. He is a brawny beefcake in the most 80s macho man kind of way. And he's like, well, we're gonna take you out to this log cabin to relax because the doctor said that because she's a writer, her imagination is too wild and untamed. So she needs to go out and be removed from all distractions and just to unwind and relax. So she drives out there. She gets driven out by Tom, again, who goes and drops her off there. They have a run-in with a sheriff. They're going to a place called Drago.
Yeah.
That is not Dolph Lundgren's character from Rocky IV. It is a town. And that's where the cabin is. They're going to stay in Drago, and the sheriff of Drago shows up and is instantly a massive dick, as every American sheriff must be in any film ever.
He can't be helpful. No, he's just like, what are you doing? Where are you going? Why? Who's this? What's your story? What's going on?
Yeah. Oh, so you just seem to be a law-abiding citizen. Well, fuck you, because I'm probably a werewolf.
Spoiler, he is a werewolf.
Spoiler, there's werewolves in this film, but you wouldn't be able to tell it from the first 70 fucking minutes of the film. And then they get to the cabin, and then we get like the fucking dick measuring competition between Richard and Tom. Like,
yeah, so Tom's the agent, Richard's the husband.
Marie,
they're both like beefcake douche nozzles.
This is the point when you're watching the film like where you just feel at any moment it's going to descend into pornography, that like some fucking like smooth bass lines and wah guitar is going to come up and people are just going to bone down.
There is some boning down that happens, but not for ages later.
There is, but we were just watching this, and like the amount of scenes, like we were talking, like this could have been another Howling film related drinking game, that you just drink any time that you feel a scene is about to descend into pornography, and it would probably ruin you just as badly as the drinking game for the credit sequence of Howling 2, because it's just so many times you're just kind of like, everyone is just one step away from unbuttoning their shirts and just getting down. But anyway,
there was none of that in the original Howling that they're basing this off. There was some element like the sexual politics of people's marriages and stuff was a plot point in that first one, but only in that element of Dee Wallace's character and her husband were kind of like out of sync with each other. Mm. You know, they both needed each other, but they couldn't quite like get their needs to match, and so that he ended up being driven away and going out with Marsha the werewolf, and you know, like cheating on her. It was all horrible. In this, it's just like everyone's ready to bone down at any point, but they don't for no reason.
Yeah, and there is still some of that politics between the couple and this, but they just it's just not. It's not as well done, and you don't really care.
Meh.
You're just a bit like, she's all right, and he's a knob.
Yeah.
So
he's a knob. That is the right word for him.
He's a fucking knob. Big old douche nozzle. So anyway, they're just hanging out in this cabin in Drago so that she can relax. They go into the town. We get quickly introduced to who are some of the other characters. So obviously we've got the sheriff. We have the arts and crafts shop lady, who is basically Marsha the Nympho.
From the first film. But
yeah.
So she's like the kind of hippy dippy
sexy vamp.
Her character is not well rounded at all. She just wears a black dress and like has some...
and just has come to bed eyes the whole time, and so instantly clocks onto Richard.
Yeah, that's it. That is the entirety of her character development.
And then there's like Mr. and Mrs. O, who were like the general store people.
Can I talk a little bit about Mr. and Mrs. O? First bit of this film that really got me excited was a truly bizarre scene showing shocking behaviour, which really made me leap up out of my seat, grab my pen and start writing. It's when our hero couple, Marie and Richard, they turn up at the general store, they meet Mr. and Mrs. O, who own the general store, and they're like, hi, well, you know, welcome to the general store, are you new in town? You know, what can we get? And Richard hands over bunch of scraps of paper, which is his shopping list, on multiple tiny scraps of paper, and goes, we need all of these things. And Mr. O goes, right, I'll go and get those for you. Now, I have been in shops before.
Me too.
Most of them expect me to pick out my own items.
I know. The only thing, it's like a weird, bizarre version of online shopping, except you just show up at the shop.
Give them your little napkin that just has like the word condoms written on it four times.
Condoms, four boxes of Frosties, some milk.
Yeah. And they're like, yeah, we'll pick those out for you, of course.
Yeah.
That's weird, isn't it?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know what Richard's fucking problem is and why he can't go and pick out his own Frosties off the bloody shelf. But there's no reason why Mr. O, a hardworking man... I mean, I've worked in shops before, and sometimes people just take fucking liberties, and it just gets my goat. They don't even know they're born.
Is there something for the tension of this film that this was the bit that made me go, oh, no, wait, I've got something to say about this?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Yeah.
So do carry on.
Yeah, fucking like shop politics is is really struck a nerve with us, because there's not any fucking wolfing in it.
Tell you what there is, which we should skip ahead to. Fucking ghosts.
There's ghosts.
Left, right and centre there's ghosts. So the house that they are staying in, this house in Drago that Richard the husband has rented, apparently without checking the Yelp reviews, it's full of fucking ghosts, man. So the people that used to own it are dead. They are brown bread.
Oh, yeah. So Marie goes downstairs and she sees an old man and an old lady. And they're like, no, run away.
Get out.
Load of stuff falls over. And she goes, ah, ah, ah. Richard comes down and goes, what is it, woman? And then obviously, like, nothing has changed. Everything's fine. And he's like, well, you're just a dick. And walks off. But ghosts.
They're there. And the nun, the bug-eyed nun comes back as a ghost.
The bug-eyed nun shows up in the cottage as a ghost. Now, there's a few other things. Marie has a dog called Pierre, which is a poodle.
Rubbish name for a dog.
Because Marie's just awful, apparently, as well, but just not as awful as Richard. The dog goes missing, which is a little minor plot point. She gets a little bit worried, like trying to find the dog. She goes looking in the woods, goes across an Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom style rope bridge, finds a cave. Pierre's severed head is in the cave and she runs away.
So pissed off that Indiana Jones rope bridge never becomes like a major plot point.
No, I was really hoping that there would be like a wolf chase across the rope bridge, and it would be like the Indiana Jones, but you'd have wolves on either side and something, you know, they'd have to like cut the bridge or jump off the bridge. None of that. Fucking Chekhov's rope bridge.
At this point with the dead dog, I'm kind of still invested. I'm like, cool, you know, like it's about time to start ramping up the tension. Let's see whether it's, you know, so far, so Howling One.
And then Janice shows up.
Who's Janice?
Janice is the nun. She's a former nun.
Not the bug-eyed nun, different nun.
She is a friend of the bug-eyed nun. And she is a Sister Ruth, the bug-eyed nun. Janice is a was Ruth's friend and is a fan of Marie's writing. And she's like, I heard that you were staying in the area. I had to come and talk. And then they become firm friends.
Nah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens, but nah.
Oh, no, it's shit.
I've seen Stephen King's Misery. That's not the way that that goes down. You never become friends.
Yeah, she's... okay, now, here is the other thing about Marie. She went and screamed at a barbecue.
They locked her up.
And they locked her up. The next scene... when she is out of the mental hospital, she is fine. And she is fine for the rest of the film until about an hour in when things are starting to get actually legitimately weird and people are dying. Like, she, you know, it's like hey, hey, Marie, how's it to be out of the mental hospital? Oh, everything's fucking great. She's absolutely fine.
She even complains. The first scene that you see her out of the barbecue, she complains that her husband is being a bit of a downer because he's stressed out from work.
Yeah. She's like, you're the one who's meant to have had an emotional breakdown.
It's bad. It's bad, guys. It's bad writing. It's bad characters.
It's not good. It's not good. And at this point, like at various... So basically, she pals up with Janice. Janice is looking for, like, what happened to Sister Ruth.
Sister Ruth used to live in the same house, went a bit doolally.
She went doolally, and then she came back to her convent, and she was like a shadow of her former self, and she died. So obviously something happened out there in them woods.
Do not be expecting to ever really properly find out what happened beyond
werewolves. Oh no, werewolves.
That's the answer.
Yeah, basically, werewolves.
Meanwhile, the sexy vampy lady is seducing Marie's husband, Richard. Mm. He's a bellend. Like, there's no montage of them slowly drifting away.
No,
there's no motivation for him where he's got like something else that's preying on his mind that keeps pulling him back.
He fucks off every now and then to go into the city for work. You get the impression that he's stressed out.
Boo hoo!
Yeah, I know.
Boo hoo!
She's had a mental breakdown.
Yeah, he's supposed to be there. He's not like Moustache Man from the first film, but where then
he didn't stand up to much pressure.
Yeah, but this guy stands up to literally zero pressure.
It's because he's a nutter knobbag. But basically, there's a point where like he's kind of like, we've gone away so you can recuperate your mental health, but I'm going to go to the bar in the town. I'm going to leave you here. And he goes to the bar and then he goes and fucks the woman who runs the gift shop.
It's a really, really long, weirdly framed shot with like this kind of awesome like tapas bar music playing over it. Of just them boning down. There is a good bit where he shoots a rabbit and brings it home for dinner.
Oh, okay. So now you brought up the rabbit bit. Now this might be controversial because this film, I feel, is a controversial film because it's not a good film. Someone's got to get an ND award. And damn it, I hate him, but I'm giving it to Richard.
Tom, this is more controversial than the Oscars.
I know. Why so Richard? Because in this film, it's just flat, dude. I mean, you know, you just sat through that film with me and it is flat. The only time when we were watching this film that we were getting invested is when Richard is on screen just being the biggest dick you have ever seen.
He's the absolute worst.
Exactly.
And I want to say that we love to hate him, but no, I hate to hate him.
I know, but everybody else is just like blur. Like everyone else is just like a fucking flat line.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
We get more of a reaction from him than we do out of any of the so-called legit villains.
Exactly. I mean, I would argue that he is the villain of the piece, like more so than like the sheriff or any of the other like the werewolves that actually reveal themselves. That like he is the worst one in it, and so I've got to give it to him. And there were a few lines that sold it for me.
Hit me, brother, hit me.
So there's this bit where he just kind of like barges through the door of their cabin with a gun in one hand and a dead rabbit in the other hand. You know, bit of a hark back to the first Howling film. And he just says, like, boil the water, honey. The man done brought home the bacon. And then he gestures to the gun. I got this in L.A. Thought it would make you feel safe. And I would just be like, no, I don't feel safe. No.
I never feel safe knowing that you are in the wild.
And then there's this whole bit, like, later on in the film, where Janice and Marie, they're really they're convinced that there are werewolves. Like, in this film, Marie just goes around going, didn't you hear that wolf? And everyone goes like, no, it was a badger. Or something like that. You know, like, everyone is utter wolf denialists in this film. Like, never heard of a wolf. Wouldn't have it out here. It was probably the rubbish truck or something picking up the bins in the morning. And then, like, he's had it up to here with all that. And I think by this point, he might have been turned into... I'm not sure. But he goes, it's like... You've taken a few bad dreams and a demented lesbian and come up with werewolves, which is a great line. And then the final clincher is just at the very end of it, he is wearing triple denim.
Not one denim, not two denim, triple denim, guys.
Stonewashed denim jeans tucked into fucking, like, you know, tan leather boots with a stonewashed denim shirt unbuttoned all the way down to his fucking crotch with a sleeveless denim jacket. Oh,
damn.
Oh no, you didn't, sir.
Yeah.
God damn.
Oh. Well, Richard, the douchebag husband, I hate to do it. But I'm forced by the...
He kind of just gets it by default.
The rules of this academy, we're going to have to give you the fourth ever Endy Award, the Bitter End Award for Enthusiasm.
Prick.
Okay, so on the subject of our regular features, I think that we need to... Because the next thing we need to talk about is the big plot point of... The Bell Tower. Now, we cannot talk about the Bell Tower without visiting one particular corner and another particular corner, which together will make a square.
Whoa.
So, instead of doing Rules Corner or Wolves Corner, I propose we do Rules Wolves Square.
Rules Wolves Square.
Okay, so this is a weird one, man, because they don't really bring many rules into it, and they certainly don't bring any fucking wolves into this film until, like, the last possible moment. But it's all about this bloody bell tower.
Yeah, so it's in Drago.
In the town of Drago, in America, there is this big bell tower, and they make a big point of telling you...
Don't go near it.
Don't go near it. Don't go anywhere near it. To the point that when you try and go near it, the locals will come and, like, physically pull you away and be like, oh, no, come into my house, have some lemonade, whatever, whatever, whatever. The bell from it came from a Romanian town called Draga.
Mm.
Now, I looked up Draga while we were watching the film because looking things up...
You've got to have something to do.
Wikipedia is more interesting than watching the film. It's a real town. Real town. Doesn't have a Wikipedia entry, but does exist. This bell is apparently the source of the evil in the town, because this is why it is a rule and a wolf's point. It's not a bloodline like it has been in previous films. It is the wolves themselves, the werewolves. It's a satanic cult that emanates from the evil in this bell. Because when Richard, the douchebaggy husband, does eventually turn into a werewolf, he does so in spectacular fashion while the villagers are around him chanting,
Satan calls you.
Satan calls you.
Which, because I'm dyslexic, have written down in my notes as Stan calls you. So basically, just to quickly roll it back, Richard was boning down with the gift shop owner. During the bone down, she very briefly wolfs out. And look great as a wolf for all of, like, 5 seconds.
She gets that, it's that black leather-faced wolf that we saw in the trailer.
Really cool. Bites his shoulder and then fucks off. When she fucks off, you just see, like, a dog. And then there's this whole cover-up where, like, he gets found and he's all bleeding out. And then like in the morning, the doctor's like, oh no, he's fine. It was just a scratch. He fell down a hole.
And we're like, oh no, he didn't.
But now when he changes, oh my God.
This like, is good, guys.
We were absolutely losing our patience with this film. I was just so pissed off with like how little had actually happened in it. And then this scene happens, and it is like, it's, you described it as being like a scene from the first Hellraiser film in reverse.
Yeah, you know that bit where, if you've seen the first Hellraiser, where Frank Cotton first comes to life and he starts as like a puddle of blood, and then out of the puddle of blood, a skeleton climbs, and then flesh starts to build on his bones, and then he can talk and move, and then eventually he's in a bloodstained suit. It is that backwards, guys. He starts to get covered in yogurt,
and then
all of the yogurt falls off, and then he like, but you, when it reaches the point that you think, okay, he's done melting, they're going to cut away. No, he keeps melting. Mm. He keeps melting to the point that he's like a skeleton. And then you're like, whoa, that is baller. They melted him right down to just being a skeleton. And then his shins snap and he falls over into the puddle of like the bits of him that have melted. And this is when all the villagers come out and go, Satan calls you. Stan is calling you. Stan, come to Stan. And he keeps melting. And all we can ascertain, it's a guess on me and Tom's part, but that this is perhaps that the very first wolf transformation is the most painful.
Mm.
And
because from out of the puddle then like a paw starts to form.
Oh, and it's good.
Yeah,
it's real good. And at this point a lot of the other villagers, they've gotten into the spirit and they have transformed into actual just dogs. They've just brought some dogs and they've got red eyes.
They're standing there like
they're a bit furry-faced
to begin with as like semi-wolves. And then when Marie and Janice, they run off to the bell tower because they're like, go to the bell tower because...
The place where everyone insisted you don't go.
Yeah, because plot points. And then they all turn into dogs with glowy red eyes. And then they get to the bell tower. And who is in the bell tower? It's the lovely doctor who's seemed to be the most nice and reasonable member of the community so far. But, he is a big baddie. He turns around, he's like, you were right. We are werewolves. After everyone has been like, no, it's not werewolves. It's squirrels. No, it's werewolves. And he's got this big, like, gurney jaw.
Oh, it's
he's got this big gurney jaw. We're werewolves. And he puts his fucking hands in his arm. And he's like... And he rips his fucking face open.
I realised that while Tom was describing a very important cool bit there, he put his fingers in his mouth and you couldn't hear him. So just to translate, the doctor puts his fingers inside his cheeks, which would make you talk like this.
Don't question my process, Tom.
And then he just pulls his own cheeks off and he's got like wolf teeth underneath and it is fucking... brilliant.
And then he properly like fully wolfs out, and the wolf in this is so much better than anything we saw in 2 and 3. I'd say it's my favorite,
it's borderline better than the first, right?
Yeah, I think
it's
so.
It's really good. It's really good, guys.
It is the most evil, I think. That is,
yeah,
I think that is the thing.
He's got those big pointy ears that I love from the first Howling. You know, it's distinctly like a Howling style werewolf. It's got the big long pointy ears. He's really tall, and you just look at him and it's not like, oh, this is an endangered species that we need to protect from the American government. You don't have that. It's not like, oh, he's on his way to the sexy boob cult in Transylvania. There's none of that. It's just like, how can I get the fuck away from this big wolf man as fast as I can?
And it is believable as being like a demon beast. Because in Sister Ruth's Bible, there was something which Janice found in an earlier scene. There is something written on there saying, the devil's hatred for God has turned man into habitation for demons. And you believe that that is a demon wolf beast. So this is the new rule and twist on the wolves, that they are demonic. I mean,
it's the first time we've had that. Before we've had in Howling 2, it was evolution. It was the next stage of evolution.
Mm.
In in Howling 3, it's, you know, this kind of like...
Evolution,
this long bloodline. I mean, even in the Howling 1, they're like a dying breed. They're like, they're trying to assimilate into regular society.
And werewolves have always been a curse, but it's never been explicit that it comes from something demonic.
Yeah. In this, it's just it's pure evil, and I'm digging it in my horror films.
Yeah. So basically what happens, Marie has to like run out and burn down the church, while Janice goes and rings the bell to summon all the wolves to the church so that they can all be burned alive in there.
Oh, and it's pretty raw.
And you feel bad for Janice because she's just...
Ringing the bell.
I know, and there's no reason why Janice should die over Marie. I mean...
She's not better than her.
She's not better. Other than just, you know, what, because she was a nun? That doesn't make any difference.
Yeah, I know. It's a bit... It's not really addressed. There's no resolution with, like, oh, it's what she would have wanted.
Although, in the end... Neither of them really come out that well. Because basically, everything blows up. Like, this Jeep, rolls down into the church and blows up. Like, whoa, that is a big explosion. And then Marie is just watching all the wolves burning up in the flames. And that's cool. Especially the big demon wolf in writhing around in the flames. That looks insane. She's looking around and seeing all these wolves burning up. And she sees this wolf on the ground, which is Richard. And she said, Richard. And it's like kind of like, A, he's definitely dead. B, he's definitely a werewolf. C, he's definitely a prick. Get over it. And she's there, Richard. And then she looks up into the flames and the wolf goes, Rrr! And then she goes, credits.
Good night, nurse. Loving it.
Yeah. I mean, they really pull it back from what is a 70-minute dirge.
If it was a 20-minute short, I would have really liked it.
The creature effects are really good.
Yeah.
And that is what saves it. But it is a... it's not a very... It's not an exciting film at all.
No.
It's weak. At least, 2 and 3 are definitely bad. Unequivocally bad, but they are entertaining in their badness, whereas the badness of this is just like you're just shouting, just like, fuck you, get on with it.
Yeah. I mean, I made a lot of notes during this film, as I mentioned before, it's the first time I had to doodle, but some examples of my notes that I've written are: I don't want fucking ghosts, cut to the fucking chase, really, really, really extended shot. I've written triple denim. I've written too much ham. There was a bit where they were having dinner and there was a big plate of ham, and I was like, that is too much ham for the two of them. And Tom, the last page of notes that I'd wrote, let me show you. I've just written the word melting man 8 times. Which was at which point, that was when I was starting to get really excited during that final transformation.
As well,
I wrote
you
Melting
should.
Man 8 times, and then I threw my pen away and I was like, I have to watch the rest of this.
Yeah, I was just, it was properly like edge of seat when stuff actually happened, but it took, in the reverse of the last film we watched, where it just tailed off and just went walkies and didn't know what was going on. This one just kind of ambled around for 70 minutes and then suddenly remembered it's meant to be a werewolf film and then quickly bunged in some cool shit. I can't believe they just didn't use more of that amazing werewolf. And the other thing is, this is the fourth film in the franchise. We know it's bloody werewolves. You don't have to, make it a mystery for that long.
Yeah,
everybody knows they're fucking. It's a town full of werewolves.
It's not just that it's the fourth film in the franchise. It's borderline a remake of the first film.
Yeah, we know. We fucking know that they're werewolves. Don't wait until the last 15 minutes.
Now this brings me to a slightly worrying aspect, Tom, because the next film that you and I are going to watch this time next week for the podcast. It's The Howling 5, which is called The Howling Rebirth.
But we just watched the original.
I know. I don't know anything else about this film other than the title, but this sounds like a second attempt at a reboot to me.
Motherfuckers.
Rebirth after the original Nightmare.
Who thought this was a good idea?
I don't know. Now, I don't want to be a hater because this franchise has got a surprising amount of ups and downs. You know, it's rivaling Highlander with like weird twists and turns. Mm. I love that first film so much, and it's a legitimate good film by any stretch of the imagination. The next two sequels took us in some insane places, all over the world, like really weird styles, all kind of in mental messages and weird shit. This fourth one is, you know, it's bad, but you can tell they've attempted to make it a bit more serious. They're trying to get it back on the reins, and they're like, no, we're getting control of this franchise again, and we're taking it back to its roots. I have no fucking clue what is about to happen next week. I don't know what we're going to watch.
Because it seemed like it got back on the rails in terms of quality visually. Like, it looks better.
Yeah,
this film looks a lot better. In terms of storytelling and things like that, it is arguable whether or not this is any better or worse than 2 and 3. Because the thing that really separates 2 and 3 from this one is that they just look like garbage.
Legit.
Yeah, like, they legit look bad. Whereas this is just boring and then suddenly has something amazing happen at the end. So fuck knows what is going to happen in the next one.
What do you want to see?
I really don't want to see a rehash of these people in the fucking woods. I think it's been nice going different places. You know what I mean? So like another change of scenery. I would like it to cut to the chase a bit sooner.
It is a bit hard. I can appreciate the difficulty with that whole thing of like holding the werewolves back. Like, it must be hard. You go to see one of these films, you know there's going to be werewolves in it. But if you show the wolves from like shot one onwards, you're not going to get as much tension. It's a fine line, I think.
I guess the thing with these is, like, compared to some other werewolf films, is that the werewolves are the villain, and they are out in the fucking netherworld or something like that. Whereas other werewolf films, it is like your central character or a central character has the curse.
Yes.
And it is and they are dealing with the curse, which is a really interesting, like, sort of story point.
Yeah.
Whereas these films where it's like, there's some baddies out there. I think there's some baddies. Ooh, it's a mystery. That's not as compelling as I am now going through this body horror of turning into some creature that will kill people.
Yeah, every one of these films so far has been about someone stumbling upon a community of wolves that has stayed hidden from us, which, if done right, is quite scary. This idea of, like, especially if the films are approaching it, it's like, oh, you're a city person, you're lost in the country, you're stuck there, and then suddenly everyone in the country is part of this, like, secret race of werewolves, and they're turning on you, and oh my god. And a few things that were done quite well in The Howling 4 that we watched tonight were just these moments where the couple were in the house and it's quiet at night, and then you hear this howl out in the night, and it's just such a recognizable spooky sound of just ow-woo.
Yeah.
In the distance. And you're just like, oh, I hope that's not coming towards here. That's cool. So I get that. But I think you're right. I think it's time for the franchise to show us something more from the point of view of someone who has been attacked and is going through that change. That American Werewolf in London story, basically.
Or the other thing, like, which I said, like, the first two films that have kind of reminded me, like, the trailers, not the films, have reminded me of The Lost Boys, that the idea of that you've got someone who's almost being lured into that pack life, which you know, like, that thing, like, where someone befriends that group of kids who are the wolves, and then they have that thing like, do I want to give up my humanity? Do I want to become this sort of like demonic beast in exchange? You know, like, I get all this power, but then what do I lose?
Yeah. That would be really interesting.
That would be an interesting thing, whereas it's just usually like, there's some baddies and then they die, then we kill them at the end.
And I'm hoping that with that title, The Howling Rebirth, that'll kind of, maybe, it does that allude to this process that they'll go through, the person doing changing into a wolf? Will that be them being reborn?
Well, there's only one way to find out.
There's only one way to find out, guys. Tune in next week.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Are we done?
I think we're done.
I think I'm Todd Lee T.
I'm Tom Denny.
We are The Bitter End. Thank you for listening. Hey, if you want to do us a favour, it would be really, really good if you could tomorrow find someone who doesn't know about the podcast and tell them about the podcast. That's all you have to do. All you have to do is spread it like the lycanthropic disease. And until then, please come back and join us for The Howling Rebirth.
Awoo.
Awooga.